a loop-de-loop through the vines, merely making small talk with a small voice. Ha! You know, I'll bet that given some more time to evolve, your species would have fixed that problem with your lungs. I can appreciate making use of existing hardware and giving it a new function, but there are other areas of your body that make noise when air is pushed through them. Wouldn't it be so much more efficient if you could communicate that way instead? It was best not to encourage him when he got like this, though I was happy to hear him acting more like his old self. When I'd first found him in the drone, slow of speech and feeling betrayed, I worried I'd never get him back. Then, after his bout of angry emotions, well, hearing him making fun of human biology was a relief. The sounds from behind us grew even louder. I charged forward and met up with Chet, who had paused to wait for me. He took off again as soon as I reached him.
"Something's wrong," he said quietly.
"The Grig shouldn't be following. This is bad, Spence and Nightshade. Very bad."
A loud snap sounded behind us. It was closer now, too close, terrifyingly close.
"Don't look,"
my warrior heritage whispered to me. I looked anyway. The thing was back there, moving with an incongruent grace. It slid its mouth neck among the trees, whiskers along its length, feeling the way for its larger body to follow. The eyes on its torso at the base of its trunk were now glowing white, just like the eyes of the wounded alien and the Delvers. I felt the cold sensation increase, a pressure on my mind, as if it was reaching toward me, searching for me. It knew me.
"Chet," I shouted, turning toward him. Somehow I'd managed to avoid tripping. "It's right there."
He leaped through a line of shrubs. I followed and broke out of the jungle, then pulled up hastily as I realized I'd not only reached the end of the trees, but the end of the land itself. An expanse of open air extended before me, broken by distant masses of earth and stone that were floating there, idly drifting. We hadn't been in an ordinary jungle, but one that grew on a giant, floating chunk of ground. And there was no path forward that I could see. Chapter 6. Chet immediately took off to the right, running along the edge of our fragment of land.
"This way!"
I scrambled after him, but risked a glance back. I was rewarded with an encouraging sight. Though there was a meter of open space between the jungle and the cliff, the monster was wider than that. So while we could run on a straightaway, it had to maneuver around trees and tangles of foliage, its trunk, mouth, nose thing wagging angrily.
"Spencer," Embot said, hovering along beside me. "I am not enthused by my first experiments in self-determination. My chronometer details that since my awakening, I've spent a frightening amount of my time lost, pouting, or being chased by interdimensional monsters."
I nodded, but kept running, trying to save my breath. He zipped out a little farther ahead of me.
"If you were to rate my mastery of emotions on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give me?"
I grunted.
"I'll pretend that was a 3, Embot said. "I know it wasn't optimal, but for a newly awakened robot, you have to admit that I did a fine job. In fact, all things considered, I think I deserve higher than a 3. I feel bad that you'd rate me so low, Spencer."
I glanced over my shoulder again. The beast had fallen behind, but I could still see those eyes glowing on either side of its trunk.
"What?"
I felt the word pushed into my mind.
"What have you?"
I redoubled my efforts anyway, and with a burst of speed caught up to Chet.
"Where," I managed to say, "are we going?"
He pointed ahead.
"Another fragment up there. You see it? I'm hoping we can leap from this one to that one, and thereby escape the beast."
Tons of these fragments hovered about, all on the same plane at the same elevation, like they were scattered pieces of a puzzle on an invisible table. Ahead, a tan chunk of ground was drifting near, separated from our chunk by only a few meters.
Seeing it highlighted to me that there wasn't much rock under my feet. Did sections of these masses break off? Was it dangerous to be this close to the edge? We ran anyway, and as we drew closer, I saw that the distance between our fragment and the tan one was larger than it had looked, clearly farther than a person could jump. Chet ran beside me, and his expression fell as he obviously realized the same problem.
"Miss Nightshade," he said, glancing toward the monster. "I fear I might have led us both to our dooms. Would you prefer to try to hide in the forest or stand and fight?"
"Neither," I said, feeling that beast's mind pressing against mine.
"Embot, want to earn a 10 out of 10 on saving my life?"
"Ooh," Embot said. 10 is way higher than 3. I mean, depending on your frame of reference, of course."
"Go attach your light line to that other fragment," I said, panting. "Then come back. Meet us by that boulder up ahead, where the two fragments are closest to one another."
He zipped off. I wasn't certain how much mass that little drone's acclivity rings could support, but a good light line could bear my weight and more.
"Excellent idea," Chet said. "Keep running. We can make it."
Behind, the beast roared, but the voice was different now. It sounded like 100 different versions of the same roar, overlapping. I glanced over my shoulder and saw it charging toward us, nearly upon us. Scud! Couldn't it see I wasn't worth the effort? That had to be one advantage I had over someone like Conan the Barbarian. I would barely constitute a snack. But I didn't think it was my flesh it wanted to consume. Fortunately, Embot's drone moved at a good speed. He was already attaching the light line to the other fragment. That accomplished, he streaked toward us, trailing the glowing reddish-orange line of energy. The monster's footsteps shook the ground just behind us. I could practically feel its breath.
"Come on."
Embot soared back, then pulled up short right before reaching our fragment. He jerked to a halt in the air. The light line wasn't long enough. He was so close, though. I glanced at Chet. He nodded. Only one thing to do. We reached the part of the fragment nearest Embot, and together, we jumped. We probably made a dramatic sight, the two of us hanging in the air as the monster arrived and snapped at the place where we'd been standing. We soared over an infinite expanse, and I managed to grab Embot's drone. Chet missed. He'd aimed too low and ended up slamming into my waist. We all started to plummet as Embot's acclivity rings proved far too weak to keep us in the air. I was almost jolted free as Chet got a grip on my leg and we swung like a pendulum away from the jungle. I hung on for dear life, my eyes squeezed shut, concentrating on keeping my grip on Embot's drone. We swung back and forth a few times before slowly coming to a rest. I opened my eyes. Embot's light line was attached to the fragment some 15 meters above us. I held to the drone with everything I had, and Chet clung to my left leg.
"Well," Embot said, "you don't need to rate this rescue on a scale. I figure it's pretty much pass-fail, right?"
I grunted, hugging the drone tighter to my chest. I was really glad I was in a jumpsuit, because otherwise there was a good chance Chet would have ended up falling for eternity, his only company a pair of women's trousers. Embot began to retract the light line. Fortunately, the mechanism proved strong enough to hold us as we inched upward. I glanced behind me, where the monstrous creature stood at the edge of the jungle, watching. Those haunting eyes glowed so brightly they consumed its other features. Vast, terrible, they intruded on my mind.
"What have you done to the us? What have you done?"
That was the Delvers. I recognized their minds.
"Can you hear that?"
Chet asked softly. "Yeah," I said, squeezing my eyes shut again. I forcibly pushed the Delvers away. When I opened my eyes, I saw the beast retreating into the jungle, vanishing in the shadows.
"I sure am glad everything turned out all right," Embot said as we slowly moved upward. "Actually, that's me lying. Look at how good I've gotten at that. In truth, Spencer, I'm still frightened, even though we're safe now. Why is that? Shouldn't I be relieved?
I shook my head. It sometimes takes a few minutes for nerves to settle.
Chet, how you doing down there? Contemplating my life's choices, Miss Nightshade, his voice said from below. How is your grip, if you don't mind me asking?
Solid, for now, I said.
If you start to slip, I'd request that you inform me. As your would-be rescuer, I will not allow my weight to hasten your demise. Better that one should fall than two.
Don't talk like that, I said. What would happen? Would you fall forever?
At least until you cleverly acquired a ship and came to my rescue, he said. I'd hope my performance up to this point would earn such a turnabout. But let us simply hang on.
Fortunately, I'd positioned myself to grip not just with my fingers, but my whole arms. I was fairly stable, all things considered. We eventually pulled to a halt near the rim of the fragment, where M'Bot had stuck his light line. There were a few centimeters of slack left, but he couldn't retract that while I was clinging to his boxy form.
You'll have to climb up first, I said to Chet. Right then, Chet said. Sorry in advance.
He started pulling himself up by my jumpsuit. I focused on keeping my grip. My hands were slippery from my sweat, and Chet's weight as he climbed threatened to jostle me free. Eventually, however, he was able to grab something on top of the fragment and haul himself up over the side. I sighed in relief. His hand reached down a moment later, and I accepted the help, letting him heave me up onto the surface of the new fragment. Bits of dirt and sand rained off the side, sprinkling against M'Bot's hull as he hovered up. We were on some kind of desert fragment. It was covered in sand, broken only by occasional bits of scrub plant life. Nothing here appeared immediately threatening. Chet and I looked at each other, then both of us deliberately scooted away from the edge before collapsing and letting out exhausted sighs. My arms ached and my heart was still pounding. But when I glanced at Chet, I discovered he was grinning. And Scud, I felt the same way. There was something incredibly thrilling about our wild escape. My friends called me crazy for this sort of reaction, but Chet seemed to get it. We had no business surviving that, I said to him.
None whatsoever, he agreed. But it is the most fun I've had in ages.
M'Bot's drone turned from me to Chet, then back to me.
You're insane, he said to us, both of you. We simply appreciate life, Abomination, Chet said, dusting his clothes off and standing up. Nothing brings you more of said appreciation than nearly losing that which you value.
He walked back to the edge of the fragment and put one foot up on a rock, leaning forward as he studied the jungle fragment. It was drifting away from us at a slow speed. Standing like that in his flight jacket, I had to admit he cut an impressive figure. He reminded me of, well, someone from one of the stories. The people I dreamed about meeting, even imagined myself joining in an adventure. But I couldn't help being wary. Running into him here so quickly seemed coincidental. But what did I know? Maybe this strange place was full of heroic adventurers. You couldn't ask for a better ambiance. Because as Chet stood there staring outward, the jungle fragment drifted far enough to the side for me to finally make out the source of light in this place. A gigantic, expansive, bright sphere of light rose halfway over the horizon. It looked like a bomb frozen mid-explosion. Though it was difficult to tell from my vantage, it felt like hundreds, maybe thousands, of fragments led toward it, each with a different terrain. A thousand little worlds of adventure, leading like a broken roadway toward that enormous sphere. Was that a sun? It looked far too big and was too close. I mean, yes, it was probably hundreds and hundreds of kilometers away, but suns were supposed to be millions upon millions of kilometers away. Plus, it didn't seem to be producing any heat, and I could look directly at it without trouble.
We call it the Light Burst, Chet said, turning back to me. It's where the Delvers live. The center of everything in here. I assume from your expression that you'd like some answers.
That sure would be a nice change.
And you still intend to follow the Path of Elders? He asked.
That's why I'm here.
Then our journey begins, he said, walking over and offering a hand to pull me to my feet. Join me, Spencer Nightshade, as we head toward adventure, and I do some explaining.
Chapter 7.
All right, I said as we started across the desert. First question, how can this place be the nowhere? I've been in the nowhere before during hyperjumps. I think I'd remember flying chunks of stone and monsters with teeth in their noses.
An astute observation. What you experienced before is the inside of the Light Burst.
Chet spun around, both arms extended as he walked.
We are outside it now, in the belt, which is a boundary area. Things of our world, like time, individuality, matter itself, have leaked into the belt. Like how you get brackish water between an ocean and a river.
I've never seen an ocean, I said.
Tragic, he said. Perhaps imagine two countries next to one another. Over time, the people living near the border might pick up the other country's language, start to practice some of its habits, customs, traditions. Well, that's the belt. The part of the nowhere that abuts the somewhere, the ordinary universe, so has some of the same rules. Those who tossed you in here didn't warn you?
I wasn't thrown in, I said. I jumped in on purpose, to escape being captured.
Some might call that extreme, Chet said.
It was my warrior's duty, I explained, to avoid capture, so that I could not be tortured into betraying my friends. Chet grinned.
I like the way you think, young woman. Honor, valor. From those I've met in here over recent years, I worried such ideals had been lost.
There is this galactic empire, I told him, called the Superiority. They have a different perspective on battle.
I know the Superiority, Chet said. They have a large base in here for extracting acclivity stone.
And so they must get the stone out, I said.
Yes, but the only active portals for that are operated by the Superiority, Chet explained. From what I know of them, they are unlikely to allow access. They seem a rather controlling bunch led by some unsavory individuals.
They're absolute jerks, I agreed. The word made me sentimental and think of Jorgen. It was a stupid reaction, but it felt like years since I'd last heard his earnest voice. I'd almost been able to go back to that. Instead, I'd come here, a decision I desperately hoped was the correct one. Please, Jorgen, I thought, stay safe and be smarter than I've been. Chet snapped a branch off a nearby dried-out shrub, and we stopped walking for a moment as he drew a wide circle in the sand, with a smaller circle at the center.
Imagine this as the nowhere, he said. The Light Burst is this circle at the center. All of this larger portion is the belt, where the fragments float. I've always thought it resembled a sunny-side-up egg, the yolk being the Light Burst, and the white being all the fragments.
Got it, I said. Where are we?
Right at the edge, he said, stabbing the stick at the very rim of the drawing. This is pirate territory. Specifically, we're in the region claimed by the Cannonade faction, near the border of Broadsider faction territory. That's where we can start the Path of Elders.
Which is?
When people come into the nowhere, they leave an impression, he explained. Memories embedded into the stone of the portals.
You can view these, and a long time ago, some Cytonics organized a few of the portals into a kind of narrative.
One walks the Path of Elders to see firsthand the lore of the ancient Cytonics.
He hesitated.
I've never done it, but it supposedly requires you to travel all the way inward to the Light Burst.
I turned toward the enormous glowing sphere. That seems like quite a distance.
It's a trip of roughly 50,000 clicks.
That was a daunting distance. Even in a Poco starfighter at full speed, it was a trip that would take many hours, on foot. Well, Scud, we were talking years.
So, I said, we really are going to have to find a way to steal a ship.
I'm looking forward to it, Chet said.
I'll try not to distract us by going the other direction this time.
You made the correct choice, he said. Reality icons are worth more than ships. Unfortunately, I fear that even with a ship, our journey will be difficult.
He drew a little more on his map of the Nowhere.
I know where the Path of Elders starts, here, in the Rim, inside Broadsider territory. I can get us there. But to get any farther inward, we're going to have to move through Superiority territory, which will be very difficult. They have long-range scanners and dozens of starfighters. If we try to fly through, they're likely to intercept us.
I'm pretty handy with a starfighter, I said.
Well, I'm excited to see you fly, then, he said. The Superiority forces aren't the best pilots. In fact, everyone in here tends to be people the Superiority forced in. Not all are exiles, but the workers are pressured into their jobs at the Acclivity stone quarries at their base, Sherhold. Most of the pirates are miners who have defected. The entire place is a mess, Spencer Nightshade, full of desperate people trying to survive. To move inward along the path, we're going to have to sneak past them all. And then, well, if we have to approach the lightburst, it's going to get even worse.
He pointed at the remainder of the space, past Superiority territory, inward toward the lightburst.
This is no man's land. The fragments are more stable through this section, with less bumping or colliding, but this is Delver territory.
Isn't all of the Nowhere Delver territory? I asked.
Yes and no, he said. Out here in the belt, things are too much like the Somewhere for them. They can't see into this region well, and you can hide from them here. But if you get into no man's land, well, it will be impossible to avoid their attention. I've heard of pilots in no man's land seeing things that aren't real, or crumbling to dust.
I thought it through, surveying the crude drawing. M'Bot hovered over, inspected it, and took a picture. What's to the far right, I said, pointing, and the far left. Can you go all the way around?
Possibly, Chet said. But in those directions, there are large expanses with no fragments. Empty sections are dangerous to cross, even with a ship. But the Path of Elders is forward, not to the sides. Still determined to walk it?
Absolutely, I said.
That's the spirit, he said, standing.
Once we do all this, there will still be one problem, I said. I'll need to get home. If the Superiority doesn't let me use their portals, then what?
Well, Chet said, theoretically, there's a way out. A quite simple one.
He turned and looked toward the lightburst. Right. That was the center of the Nowhere, the place where I traveled when I hyperjumped. If I get into the lightburst, I can jump home?
I believe so, he said. I've never dared get close enough, but it should work. It's like a giant portal between dimensions, after all. I'll admit, though, the lightburst intimidates me. Inside, there is no time. There is no place. It's like a single point, somehow as vast as a universe.
Scud, that broke my brain to think about. I took a deep breath. Let's get on the path first.
Onward we go, then.
He pointed with his stick, like some general with a sword.
We'll need to cross 8 fragments to get to where the path starts. But in relative terms, that's right around the corner.
We continued across the sand, and M'Bot went hovering off to investigate some of the local plants. Just walking was harder to do than I'd imagined. It took extra effort to move when the ground kept shifting beneath you. Yet I was excited. This was all so new, so interesting. I fished in my pocket and brought out my father's pin. I felt serenity having it in my hand. How odd. Chet eyed it as he had before, hungry, as if he physically couldn't tear his eyes away from it. I trusted him well enough, but, well, that hunger made me tuck the icon away. Instead, I brought out one of the reality ashes and handed it to him. It was merely a speck, but he took it reverently and tucked it into a pouch from his pocket. Then he held that pouch, breathing in and out, and visibly relaxed. "You said people lose themselves in here without those," I said. "Is that what was happening to that Burl? The pirate whose face was melting?" Chet shook his head.
"I don't know what that was. It felt like something far worse, like
a Delver was possessing her."
"Indeed. I normally enjoy new and exciting events, yet I would not wish to repeat that one. But thank you for the ash. It is comforting to hold."
There was a haunting tone to his voice. "Do you remember anything of who you were?" I asked. "Before?"
"No,"
he whispered.
"I have forgotten myself entirely. I remember some few things about the last few days before I entered, some caverns and old ruins, but that time is so vague to me. Even my early days in here are fuzzy. That's not surprising, I confess. I've been here a long time. Almost 2 centuries, I think."
"Wait, 200 years? I asked.
"Well, around 170, he replied. "Best I can count. Time is hard to track in here, but I wrote down the date and have been able to confirm it a few times in order to help me keep track. Yet I haven't aged a single day. I haven't always been able to get ashes, so during those times I took work for one group or another, since people staying together can replicate the effect of ashes."
I found it daunting to think about what had happened to Chet. If I stayed too long, would I forget Gran-Gran? My father? My friends? Scud, I needed some time to process that. Unfortunately, M'Bot chose that moment to come hovering up, jabbering excitedly.
"Did you see those things over there, Spencer? Those are cacti. They're so beautiful. Is it normal to see something like that and feel so overwhelmed? I want to write poetry about how pretty they are."
I said.
"Cacti are so neat, they make me want to dance. Is that a good poem? Will you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10?
"Poems don't deserve numbers, M'Bot. But if you like it, then it's wonderful."
"Great. Let's see what my rhythm and rhyme analysis protocols say." "Oh, Spencer, that's a terrible poem. You should be ashamed for liking it. You know, cacti is such a funny word. I think cactuses would have been less funny, don't you? And easier to rhyme."
I just wanted a break right now. Though I loved the robot, he could be a bit much.
"Hey, I think I saw a mushroom," I said, pointing.
"What?
Really?"
he said.
"Where?"
"Between those two bushes over there, in the distance." He zoomed off. I found myself thinking about what Chet had said about his age.
200 years?
"So, are we immortal in here?" I asked.
"No," he said. "And I think my not aging might be due to my powers. Other people do age, and unfortunately, ordinary wounds can still kill us. But our biological functions are odd. You won't need food in here, for instance. And after a few days, you won't even need water. We do need to sleep, but it doesn't seem to be required as often. Night never falls. The light burst doesn't move. And the longer you stay, the more the passage of time will all blend together. Days, weeks, years, centuries."
He shook his head. "I'll admit," I said, "I'm starting to feel a little tired. It's been kind of a long day for me."
"Well then," he said. "There is some shelter farther along this fragment. I suggest we take a break there."
We'd walked for another few minutes when M'Bot came zipping back up.
"You didn't see a mushroom, did you?"
he demanded. "No," I said. "Just wanted to distract you."
"Why would you do that?"
I shrugged, not wanting to explain. "It's a joke humans sometimes play.
You trick someone by sending them on a meaningless chase.
What a terrible joke.
Scanning culture databases.
Oh, it's called Made You Look.
What an original name.
Your kind has a terrible sense of humor, something I can authentically say now, as I am truly alive.
But your prank is not important. It occurred to me that cacti are desert mushrooms. They look kind of the same, and act kind of the same. Except for the whole living in an arid location part, which would kill most mushrooms.
Great. After walking a little farther, we crested a small dune, and Chet pointed ahead.
See those hills? He asked.
I picked out some rocky chunks rising from the desert.
That will be our housing for the night, Chet explained. I'll jog on ahead to secure it and be certain the cave there is safe. Join me at your own speed. You're looking a little run down, but certainly with good reason.
I nodded, grateful, as he jogged off. Once, I might have been angry at the implication I was too weak. But he had a lot of experience in this place, and I had practically none. I was woman enough to admit that pushing myself now was a bad idea. So I followed at a slower pace, Embot at my side. Embot, I said, something occurring to me. You got a historical database from Superiority Records, right?
Sure did, he said. I had to dump a lot of it, but I kept many text files, which are small. I now know when jazz music developed. You know, in case it's important.
Chet said he's around 200 years old, I said. Would he have been alive during the Second Human War?
Most certainly, if his guess of his age is accurate, Embot said. The Second Human War began 250 years ago, but lasted decades. It was characterized by the first attempts to weaponize the Delvers, who had appeared near the end of the First Human War. The First War started when humans escaped Earth and found an entire galaxy full of people who enforced non-aggression by imprisoning, exiling, or executing those who showed aggressive tendencies. Let's just say they were not ready for your people. Boy, howdy.
Boy, howdy?
Cool, huh? I just made that up.
He buzzed around me.
No, I didn't. That was a lie. Ha! I can say them so easily now. Anyway, if Chet was born 200 years ago, he'd have lived during the time known as the Stilling, when the galaxy was actively trying to stop using wireless communication. These were the times punctuated by the worst and most terrible Delver attacks, and when the war was starting to end.
When was the original colony on Detritus destroyed? I asked.
That's uncertain, Embot said, as Detritus was a secret project. And the Superiority didn't have records of it. We can guess it was between 300 and 200 years ago.
So Chet wouldn't have been alive when it was made?
A reasonable assumption, Embot said.
We reached the hills. Chet had disappeared into a cave there, but I could see his footsteps leading in.
For further reference, Embot said, buzzing up beside me, I crashed on Detritus 172 years ago.
Huh, I said. Chet said he came in here right around 170 years ago. He mentioned remembering some caves in the place he was before he came in here. And ruins. I trailed off. We looked at each other. Or, well, I looked at the box that contained Embot's circuits, and he focused his lenses on me. Then we both took off toward the cave.
Chapter 8. The cavern was small, barely as large as one of the bunk rooms on Detritus. A soft, tinkling sound accompanied some water dribbling in through the wall and gathering in a shallow pool at the rear. Chet knelt there, washing his hands. He looked up as I skidded to a stop, kicking up sand, my fatigue momentarily forgotten.
Chet, I said, you said you remembered some things about the day before you entered.
Just bits and pieces.
Did you know someone named Commander Spears? I demanded, naming the man who had been Embot's pilot all those years ago when he'd crashed on Detritus.
Chet frowned. He shook his hands off, then stood up and ran them through his silvering hair,
Slowly, he reached to the chest pocket of his flight jacket and took something out. A patch, as if from a uniform. It said Spears on it.
Oh, Scud, I said.
I think I crashed somewhere, he said. A place with caverns and metal platforms in the sky. It's so fuzzy, though I have a distinct impression of a wall full of strange lines. I now recognize that as a nowhere portal. I must have fallen through.
Scud, 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 Scud. M'Bot hovered at my side, and I could sense his concern, like actually sense it. I could feel his emotions. He was worried, apprehensive, shocked. I found your ship, I said. It had an AI on it. You are M'Bot's old pilot.
I hardly think I could fit in a drone, Chet said.
He used to be in a ship, I explained. An extremely advanced one. All he could remember about his pilot was the name and some orders. That was you, Chet.
Nonsense, he said. Why, I find it difficult to say this without giving offense. But I would never have fraternized with an AI. They draw the attention of the Delvers.
You have the patch, I said, pointing. You remember Detritus, my homeworld. You are Commander Spears. Yet another part of me rebelled against the idea. This seems impossible, I thought. What were the chances that we'd enter the nowhere and find M'Bot's original pilot within minutes? Something very suspicious was going on.
We were friends, Chet, M'Bot said, flying closer. I mean, I don't remember that, but I felt it. We must have been. I tried to follow your final orders all those years. Kept trying until I ran out of power and shut down. Waiting.
Chet sighed.
I don't know much, but I've heard that computers have severely limited processing speeds unless you let their circuitry dip into the nowhere for calculations. It's a trade-off. Either deal with a nearly useless computer or...
He nodded toward M'Bot. They come to life? I guessed.
Everyone talks about it in here, Chet said. The pirates who used to be superiority. They whisper about it. You can't let a true AI continue to function. They'll eventually draw the Delvers to you. To keep an abomination like that is... Well, it's certain death. I'm sorry.
Why? I asked. Why would AIs bring the Delvers?
I can't remember, he admitted.
I didn't know what to make of that, or any of this. It did seem that Chet was Spears, though. We'd wondered what had happened to him after crashing on Detritus and leaving M'Bot's ship in that cave. It stood to reason that Detritus would have had a way into the nowhere, as we'd found abundant acclivity stone on the planet. The people who had built Detritus must have had mining operations, like the Superiority now had. Maybe they'd traveled here, using that spot in the caverns that had carvings like the ones on the portals.
I've tried to get back, Chet said, wistful. Find the place where I entered, then go through. Seemed like quite an adventure. But I've forgotten the way to that portal, and everyone I've found since has been locked. The people who made those portals, whoever they were, grew exceedingly frightened of what was in here.
He turned away from me and M'Bot.
Anyway, we should bed down. Camp for the night, such as it is. Tomorrow is a big day. With a solid hike, we can make it to the first portal in the Path of Elders.
He took off his jacket and began rolling it up, evidently to use it as a pillow. It was too convenient. Too improbable. Perhaps I'd been drawn to this location when hyperjumping into the nowhere. Because of him? Could that explain the coincidence? Unfortunately, I was starting to feel genuinely exhausted. I wasn't in much of a state to process this information. I pulled off my own jacket to use as a pillow, then hesitated as I noticed M'Bot was gone.
I cursed myself softly. Of course he'd left, after hearing what Spears had said.
I forced myself to hike back out of the cave and found him focused on a small cactus.
"Embot," I said.
"You know," he whispered, "I anticipated this. We even talked about it, remember? I knew they were afraid of me. Why else would my own programming forbid me from things like piloting my ship? So yes, haha, I was right. My pilot was afraid of me."
He trailed off.
It would have been okay for me to be wrong.
"Look," I said, stepping up to him, "it doesn't matter."
"It doesn't matter what the one person who knows anything about where I came from says,"
Embot answered, his voice rising.
"I think it matters, Spencer. I really think it matters."
For the first time, I was glad he was in a drone rather than his old ship. There was a certain sense of personality and emotion to the way he moved now, the way he drooped in the air, his grabber arms dangling beneath him, limp.
"It's like finding out," he said in an even smaller voice, "that your father hates you."
"I don't believe him," I said, "about you." "Why?"
"Because I haven't fought an evil wizard yet."
Embot twisted in the air. Then he rose up before me and tilted his drone sideways, perhaps in imitation of a cocked head.
"You know," he said, "I was beginning to think I could follow your leaps in logic."
"No, listen," I said, leaning in. "In the old stories, there was almost always an evil wizard. Aladdin had to face an evil wizard. And Conan, he killed like a billion evil wizards. There are tons of other examples. But how long have we been fighting with no evil wizards? We're bound to face one eventually." I put my arm around his drone and pointed toward the cave. "I don't know what's going on, but somebody or something has to be messing with us. We come in here and immediately find your old pilot? Run the numbers, Embot."
"Run what numbers?" he asked.
"You know, the statistics and stuff. Math it. What are the chances we'd run into him?"
"I have no way of calculating that," Embot said. "You assume I could devise a percentage chance for something with so many variables, most of which are unknown, likely unquantifiable."
I didn't push. "Look, that might be Commander Spears. It makes sense that he could have fallen into the nowhere, but his memories are spotty. Maybe he's not Spears, and this is some kind of setup. But even if he is Spears, my gut says we didn't meet him by chance. Trust me, Embot. In some way, in some form, we're facing an evil wizard. Or the modern equivalent."
"Perhaps," Embot said. "But you have to accept that there is evidence for what he's saying. About my kind being dangerous. My creators were obviously afraid of me."
"It doesn't matter," I said. "You're my friend. I trust you." I rubbed my forehead. "But right now, I'm exceptionally tired. Weak flesh body, remember? Let's talk about this after I get some sleep, okay?"
"I will process this information," he said, "but I won't do anything with it until I consult with you."
"Good enough," I said, then paused. "Watch Chet and wake me if he gets up, all right? I trust him well enough, but just let's be careful."
"Agreed."
We started back toward the cave. "Though," I added, really starting to feel my fatigue, "if any monsters arrive to eat me, kindly ask them to do it quietly. That might let me get a few extra seconds of shut-eye." Inside, I got a drink, then bedded down with my jacket as a pillow. I drifted off, hoping that my first night in the nowhere wouldn't turn out to be too weird. I obviously should have known better. Interlude. I drifted, and I searched. Though my body was still exhausted, my mind quested outward, somehow conscious. This had never happened to me before, but it felt like a natural extension of my powers. My mind existing separate from my body, as happened when I entered the nowhere during a hyperjump. I once again tried to hyperjump with no luck. I wasn't completely here, so to speak. So instead, I expanded my mind, searching, listening. I felt more confident with this part of my powers. Not only had I been able to hear the stars since my childhood, I'd recently managed to contact Chet using that ability. I pushed myself. I needed a destination, a location, a link. There. I found someone who was searching for me. I felt an immediate panic. Was it Braid? Some servant of the Delvers? At the same time, I knew that mind. It wasn't Braid. I was suddenly inside the cockpit of a Defiant Defense Force starfighter, Poco model. I was awkwardly crammed in the rear storage area behind the pilot seat. The Poco darted through outer space, destructor fire flaring nearby. Jorgen was flying it. I wasn't prepared for the rush of emotions that came from seeing him. Longing, passion, worry. I reached to touch him, but my hand passed through the chair. I could feel the ship shake around me, hear him curse softly as he took a sharp turn, grav caps barely compensating. Was I actually here? Was this real? His face reflected in the transparent canopy of the ship, lit from the glow of his console. There were a dozen tiny cuts on his face, and I wondered what could have caused that. The last time I'd seen him had been on that first day when I'd left Detritus for Starsight. While that had been only 3 weeks ago, it felt like an eternity. A part of me had worried I'd never see him again. Now here he was, serious as ever, almost too perfect to be real. His face a mask of concentration and sudden panic as he looked up and, "Gah!" he shouted, jerking his ship to the side. He scrambled to look behind the seat. Though he stared straight at me, he didn't seem to find anything. He turned around and hesitantly squinted at the canopy glass, as if trying to make out a reflection. When I'd seen the eyes, the Delvers, in the somewhere, it had usually happened in a reflection. Could he see me the same way? To test my theory, I waved.
"Spencer,"
he said.
"Are you?
Oh, Scud.
Are you dead?"
Right. That was probably what this looked like. I tried to speak, but I didn't have lungs here. So I tried another way, reaching out to him with my cytonic senses. "No, I'm not dead," I said, hoping he'd hear, or sense, or whatever. Though I probably should be, all things considered. He cocked his head. "Can you hear me?" I asked.
"I can feel the meaning of your words. Where are you? What's happening?"
"I'm in the nowhere," I said. "The dimension where we go when we hyperjump. I kind of fell in, on purpose. In my defense, I was being chased by half an army at the time." He grinned, and the lines around his eyes softened. I could literally feel the tension melt out of him. He'd been worried about me. I mean, I'd expected he would be, but feeling it made me choke up a little. I'd spent my life being the person most others tried to avoid. That had changed. I had a place where I belonged, with him and the rest of my friends in Skyward Flight. How I longed to return to them. A flash of red destructor fire slammed into his ship's shield, crackling. His low shield alarm started throwing a fit on his dash. "Jorgen," I shouted, "fly! You're in the middle of a firefight, idiot!"
"I'm trying. It's a little distracting to have your ship suddenly be haunted by the ghost of your not-dead girlfriend."
He steered the ship in a precise, evasive pattern. I melted a little. Girlfriend? Was that how he thought of me? I mean, we'd kissed once, but I didn't think it had been formalized or anything. I hadn't even brought him any dead orc carcasses, which I was pretty sure was the way the story said to show a guy you wanted to go official. Apparently, my feelings radiated because Jorgen, still steering, continued.
"Or, you know, whatever it is you are, to me, and I am, to you."
"It works," I said. "I'll get you an orc later."
"What?"
"It might look a lot like a rat. Fair warning." He grinned. diving away from the destructor fire. Judging by his proximity monitor, he'd lost his tail. I wished I could touch him. He looked up and met my eyes in the reflection, and I knew he felt the same. Nothing can ever be normal for us, huh? I asked.
I don't know, he said. My life was pretty normal about a year ago. Then something remarkable happened.
He smiled.
I wouldn't go back for the world. Here, let me get us a little breathing room.
He called in the flight to go on the defensive and give him time to reignite his shield. He flew his ship out of the main battle, and some members of Skyward Flight stuck nearby, offering support and distracting enemies who drew too close. I finally shook out of my stupor of meltiness. Jorgen, what's the sit rep? How long has it been?
A few days since you came here, then vanished, he said.
Good. I'd spent a few days unconscious in a superiority hospital, then one day in the nowhere. So it seemed that time passed at around the same speed in both the somewhere and the belt. Good to know.
We've heard from your friend Kuna,
Jorgen added. Oh, saints. They are alive? I'd worried.
Yeah, he said. They're safe, but trapped. We're trying to figure out how to make the slugs work for hyperdrives.
Slugs?
You missed that part,
he said, diverting power from his boosters to the shield igniter.
We have a whole flock of them. A herd? A pod? A bunch of slugs. They were in the caves.
What? Really? I asked. How did you find them?
I heard them, he said, as I'm hearing you.
You're Cytonic, I said, pointing. Your family feared it was in your bloodline. Ha! That must be why I could find you.
I've been training with Gran-Gran, he said. I'm not very good at any of it.
He grew solemn.
Spensa, it's bad. The war.
How bad?
The entire superiority is mobilizing. I had no idea how many planets they controlled, and we're isolated here. We're trying to get the slugs to work, but we have so much to learn, and—
He again met my eyes in the glass.
And we need you. I need you. What can we do to get you out of there?
I winced. Not because I didn't appreciate the sentiment, but, well, he had to know. Jorgen, I came to the nowhere by choice, I said. When I jumped through the portal, I realized I could come home, but I decided not to, because, Scud, how did I put this? I have something I need to do here, Jorgen. He frowned, looking at me in the reflection. I can't come back yet, I explained. Not until I've learned what this place can teach me. I'm sorry, but if I did return, I'd be just another fighter. I need to be something more.
You think they'll use the Delvers again?
He said, perhaps reading my emotions. I know they will, I said. Winzik won't give up because of a single setback. And Jorgen, I need to be able to stop him. To do that, I have to understand what I am, and more importantly, what the Delvers are. Does that make sense?
You think you can find these answers in the nowhere?
Yes. Jorgen, I'm on a quest. He grinned.
That might be the single most Spensa-like thing I've ever heard you say.
You're not mad at me?
I'm worried for you, he said. But if you're right, if the Delvers are still in play.
I knew, from our research into the past, that this wasn't the first time someone had sought to weaponize the Delvers. Every attempt I knew of had ended in disaster, but people continued to try. Because if you could control the thing that ate planets, who would dare stand against you?
I trust you,
Jorgen said, meeting my eyes reflected in the glass.
If you think this is important, then keep going. We will resist the superiority until you return.
His confidence in me felt wonderful. I could feel it like a warmth radiating from him. Jorgen unbuckled himself, then turned around, his knees on the seat. He closed his eyes, and I felt his attention on me. He reached out his hand, and I swore I could feel it cupping my cheek. I reached out to him, too, and could almost feel his skin.
We'll hold out, Spensa,
he promised.
Until you find what you need. which you will.
I've learned to never bet against you.
He smiled, his eyes closed.
After all, I might win the bet, but I'd still end up with a knife in my arm.
Quick tip, I whispered. Go for the thigh instead. Makes it harder for them to chase you down. I leaned forward, wanting to be closer to him, even if we could barely feel each other. But I began to fade. Scud. I suddenly felt exhausted. It had been only a few minutes, but I soon faded completely and ended up drifting in blackness. Try as I might, I couldn't find Jorgen again. My mind began to fuzz. I knew I was heading toward true sleep and started to relax. A voice. I pulled myself back to awareness. I knew that voice.
My, my, it said.
Winzik. The words pierced the darkness, reaching toward something else, beings, entities. Delvers. I could sense them now, as an infinite number of white lights. The voice I'd heard was speaking to them.
No need to be so brutal, it continued, so aggressive. I come to you with an offer, a trade. You have something I want, and I have something you want. They are not so different, are they?
That voice. That wasn't actually Winzik's voice. It was Braid's voice. Though, of course, the word voice was an approximation. She must have been relaying Winzik's words, like an interpreter. I was overhearing them, listening in, spying, as I'd been trained for so long by Grangran. My phantom sense to hear the stars.
You heard us, the Delver said to Winzik. You are noise. You are not a person. You are pain.
I am a noise that can end that pain, Winzik promised through Braid. I can round up every Cytonic in the galaxy. I can make it so none of them ever bother you again, never corrupt you again.
Oh, Scud, they wanted that. I could feel it.
Speak, they said.
I must be in control of my empire, Winzik said. Once I am, I will find and stop every Cytonic. I can't be in control, however, if you destroy my people when I summon you.
Leave us alone, the Delver said. Stop yelling. Stop it all. Why hasn't it stopped?
I sorted through the impressions and kind of understood. To the Delvers, all times and places were as one. But by interacting with us, they were forced to confine themselves to our way of existence. That said, they couldn't truly see the future. Rather, they existed in all times at once, and so couldn't separate and distinguish future from past or present. Yeah, it was tough to explain. Regardless, I felt their pain. That, it seemed, was universal across dimensions.
My, my, Winzik said. No need to shout. I can make the pain stop. But if I lose this war, well, would you like a repeat of what happened to the Delver who was corrupted? The noise who did that is among the noises I fight against.
It seemed he knew how I'd saved Starsight. I wanted to scream at the Delvers, explain that I'd helped one of their number, not corrupted them. But suddenly I understood what they'd meant earlier, when chasing me, when they'd said, what did you do to the us? They'd been referring to the one I'd separated out.
We consider this trade, the Delvers said to Winzik.
Yes, take your time, Winzik said, as much as you need.
We have no need of time. We hate it.
Yes, they did. But I could feel something more from them. Beyond their hatred of time and individuality, there was a hatred of something else, something that was coming, something they feared. I pushed a little harder to get more information. They turned toward me. Scud. I panicked and darted away, retreating toward my body. Thinking about the implications of what I'd heard would have to wait, for my mental fatigue seized control. I found true sleep. At last.
Part 2. Chapter 9. I woke to the feeling of something nudging me,
Embot? Yes, he was poking me with a drone arm. I yawned, stretching. Curiously, my strange experiences the previous night were perfectly crisp in my mind. Talking to Jorgen, feeling his concern, then overhearing the conversation between Winzik and the Delvers.
Scud.
Winzik was trying to make a deal with the Delvers. If he succeeded, the war would take a very, very bad turn.
Spensa, Embot said, you have been asleep for 10 hours, per my internal chronometer. Chet just got up and left the cave. I woke you, as you requested.
I sat up in the dim light, my back stiff from resting on stone. Embot hovered closer.
I, he said, would like to be acknowledged. It was exceptionally boring watching you two all night.
Thank you, I said. I'm sorry to make you keep watch like that, but I slept more soundly knowing you were there.
Well, to be honest, waiting isn't as bad for me as it is for a human. I can change how quickly time seems to pass for me by speeding up or slowing down my processor. I'm going to go take a cactus break. Let me know if you need me to do anything else super boring.
He floated off out of the cave, and I followed. Chet stood on some of the higher rocks of the hills here, looking outward, a heroic pose, focused, determined. I climbed up beside him and adopted a similar pose, staring across the expanse of flying chunks to the distant lightburst, home of the Delvers.
200 years, Chet said, and I'm finally going to do it. Walk the path of elders.
Why have you never tried?
At first, I didn't know about it, he said. After that, I didn't really understand what it was. Now,
he glanced at me.
I've never found a place I was afraid to travel, Spencer Nightshade. I always thought I'd be willing to explore everything and anything. But then I found something inside me, inside my head, that I didn't understand.
I felt kind of the same way.
It all worried me, he said. Chet Starfinder, afraid to explore his own mind?
He glanced outward.
I can make a picture in my head of the entire belt. I can visualize it somehow, know my way to every fragment. That's how it manifests for me, other than speaking mind to mind. What about you?
I can do the speaking thing too, obviously, I said. And more, I seem to be able to intercept thoughts that others send out, even when they don't want me to. I can use what I hear, interpret it, use it in battle by instinct. Plus, I can hyperjump, moving instantly from place to place.
So it is possible, Chet said. That sounds extremely useful.
I grimaced. Less so when you're as untrained as I am. Regardless, being able to see the landscape around you? Like you have sonar? That sounds pretty awesome.
It's useful for an explorer, I must admit, he exclaimed, then pointed. The fragment you need to reach is in that exact direction. But we'll have to take a roundabout path, I'm afraid. We travel at the whims of the fragments and can cross only when they bump against one another. I can see the route, fortunately. 8 fragments. We should be there in about a day's time.
He looked at me and smiled widely.
Are you prepared, Spencer Nightshade, for an adventure?
Absolutely.
Then onward,
Chet said, then slid down the rock slope and landed on the ground in an expert maneuver. I followed almost as skillfully.
Wonderful, he said as I landed.
I've got some experience caving, I explained. He led us off then, Embot zooming along behind as we struck outward. Over the next little while, I got a fairly good picture of this place, at least on the small scale. The fragments were of different sizes, but on average took around 2 hours to cross. And there was such variety to them. The first we traversed was covered in strange tall weeds with red tips. The next was dominated by towering rock formations rising high like sentinels. The third had enormous waterfalls that tumbled from heights and then flowed straight off the side of the fragment in some impossible continuous cycle. The travel challenged me to the extent of my physical abilities. On the second fragment, we had to rappel down the sides of cliffs using the light line. On the third, we forded a river, then crawled through a tunnel behind a waterfall. The fourth fragment was a prairie with many ravines and was populated by beasts that looked like rhinoceroses, only with two heads and fearsome teeth. It was touch and go as we hid behind rocks while they wandered past, seeking prey. Chet explained they didn't need to eat, but were instinctually driven to hunt. The next fragment was rocky and barren, with only a few small trees for plant life. We had to wait on the far side to meet up with the next one, and while we stood there, Chet suddenly rushed us beneath the cover of a small, scraggly tree with a thankfully thick canopy. Soon starships soared past, pirates on the lookout for slaves to capture. Chet saw me watching them from beneath the trees and must have noticed the hunger in my eyes.
"There is a pirate base a little beyond our first destination," he explained. "If you are still so bold as to want to try, I believe we can acquire a starship there. Through roguish means, naturally."
I grinned at his phrasing, and then we scampered out, risking being spotted by the pirates in order to catch the next fragment before it floated away. We skidded down the slope and leapt across together, reaching a swampy fragment with decaying trees and soft ground. A real swamp. Places like I'd imagined from childhood, listening to Grand-Grand's stories. They were all here.